This is 2023-0293 in the matter of Michael Berkheimer versus REKM, doing businesses Wings on Brookwood. On behalf of the appellant, Mr. Stoker, good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice. May it please the court. My name is Rob Stoker. I represent Michael Berkheimer, who joins us today. My co-counsel, Mr. Robinson, is with me at council table. I would like to reserve 3 minutes. The seller of food who makes an affirmative, unconditional statement that a food is free of any substance sets the consumer's reasonable expectation that he will not encounter and thus need not guard against that injurious substance. This is true even if the removed substance is natural to the food in its original or raw state, because once the seller affirms the substance has been removed, that substance is both no longer natural to the food being sold, and the consumer's expectation is reasonably set. He or she will not encounter the removed substance. In the 63 years since this court has handed down its decision in Allen, lower courts have repeatedly failed to embrace the Allen holding in two fundamental ways. The first is to
So would the same rule apply if it was a fillet of fish then?
Which rule, Your Honor?
The rule you want, that because someone made a representation that the wing was boneless, that if there's a bone in it, that the seller's liable.
So I think we actually have two issues to tackle here. Number one is your example with the fillet of fish, in which case we do a reasonable expectation analysis.
Well, what you said was a representation that it was free of bones, then the seller should be liable, right?
So I think an affirmative boneless representation
doesn't that mean boneless? Isn't that the definition of the word?
Ideally, yes, but it's not as strong as the affirmative statement of the boneless chicken that we have here.
If you say fillet is a word that means a boneless cut or slice of meat or fish, I just pulled that up in the dictionary. That's what that word means.
Sure.
So why would a different rule apply to a fillet of fish than a boneless chicken wing?
Number one, the affirmative statement, and number two,
isn't using a name that means boneless, isn't that an affirmative statement?
It is, but I think it's not as strong as saying boneless. And if we go back to the fillet question, the test under Allen is what is the reasonable expectation of a diner eating a fillet of fish? And encountering a bone, while a natural substance to fish, is under Allen an important but not dispositive factor in whether or not the diner would encounter the bone in that piece of fish. And I think that's really where the courts below have gone astray, is they take this circular reasoning that the injurious substance, in your example, a bone in a fish fillet or a pit in a fruit pie, and they say, okay, we have to look at reasonable expectations, and then Allen tells us the naturalness is an important factor, but it's not a dispositive factor. And then the lower courts do this circular reasoning, because pits or bones or fragments are natural to the food, at least in its raw state, then the diner should expect it. And that, we posit, is not a true reasonable expectation test. It is just a repackaged foreign natural test. And I think that's what the court did below here.
Counsel, this exchange about the fillet of fish and the boneless, whether it's reasonable, isn't that a matter for a jury to decide? They could decide one way or the other that it was unreasonable.
That's right? Exactly right, Your Honor, and that's what we're asking for, is that this matter proceed to a jury and allow the jury to determine the reasonable expectation of encounter.
So anytime someone finds a bone in a fillet of fish, it should go to the jury?
Not any time, but I think the analysis that we need to see from courts below has to be more complete than this sort of circular, bones are natural to fish, therefore the diner should have expected it, verdict for the or summary judgment for the defense. That's what we're trying to get past.
Judges make decisions on summary judgment as a matter of law.
Yes.
Is there some statute that I'm unaware of that prevents a case in which someone who advertises boneless wings and someone eats a bone in a boneless wing that would prevent this from going to the jury?
Is there a case that would prevent?
There's a case law, some judge-made law from 1960, right?
That says that this shouldn't go to a jury?
Right.
Well, we think it should.
Right.
And I think Allen says you have to take this holistic approach of the reasonable expectation, because even in Allen, you know, the shell that injured the Allen diner was rather large. And Allen says, well, if the shell had been broken into smaller pieces, then maybe we have a different outcome.
But you started out your argument by saying that once you make a claim that you have processed this food item, then anything that was originally natural to it, it is now considered not natural to the food. So going back to Justice DeWine's question, it's a fillet of fish, I'm eating it, I expect that all I have is a piece of fish, so how is that not just automatic to the jury? Because what you've asked for is for us to write that once it's been processed, it is not natural to the food any longer. So you're treating it as if it's a foreign object.
Yes. Because the seller has that control. The seller sets the expectation of the marketing. And to hold otherwise, I think, leads us down a path of absurd results of injury wherein a consumer could not reasonably guard against the injurious substance. As we mentioned in our brief, for example, something like a lactose-free dairy product. If the dairy product is advertised as lactose-free, there is no way somebody with a medical condition where they can't process lactose can take a sip of milk and separate out the lactose from the rest of it. So yes, it does become a foreign substance because once the advertisement and the selling of the product sets the consumer's reasonable expectation, that's what the consumer expects to get. They expect the boneless chicken, they expect the lactose-free milk, they expect the gluten-free
bread. So would the result be different if they had advertised that they were selling chicken strips?
So that would depend on the holistic approach. Does the menu say that, hey, perhaps our chicken strips may contain bones? It goes on to what is the reasonable expectation of consumers in eating chicken strips. We look, is this a processed product that's ground and reconstituted? Is it cut off the carcass of the bird? How do we get there? If we can just say food X, natural substance result Y, I don't think we embrace the Allen holding, which really requires the reasonable expectations of the consumer, which includes, of course, the advertisement, the experiences of the consumer, the production methods to get to whether or not as a matter of law, the case can go forward to a jury.
So the advertising now says traditional wings, and then it says maybe, maybe not traditional or boneless, right?
Sure.
That's what you're looking for, maybe, maybe not.
A disclaimer certainly moves the, and when I say disclaimer, I mean, you know, an asterisk that says our boneless products may still contain bone fragments, certainly moves the decision-making away from a blanket advertisement that says boneless, but we still need the full reasonable expectation analysis.
So now it needs a warning instead.
A
warning like what I read on my coffee cup, the contents of your coffee cup are hot.
So yes, under that circumstance, I still think there are situations that could result in summary judgment being granted, but similarly, summary judgment not being granted and having a jury determine whether or not the individual reasonably expected to encounter the injurious substance, because the asterisk on the menu is another data point to set the expectations of the consumer. If you've got, you know, 72-point font of the food advertisement and 8-point font of the warning, that may be a different outcome than if they're in the same font, the same physical proximity.
So getting away from that detail, because I don't think it's really an issue here, okay. The comparison between the fillet of fish and the boneless chicken wings, you're kind of saying that with a fillet, some people's expectation would be that they don't understand filet means boneless, but with boneless chicken wings, it's right there in their face, and that's what they expect.
Yes, Your Honor, I don't think there is any way to interpret boneless other than no bones.
So we should write a rule for people who don't understand what filet means? That should be how we look at this?
No, not at all. I think what we need is a clarification of Allen that says the naturalness of a substance alone is insufficient to raise the consumer's reasonable expectation.
But isn't that what consumers set their expectations on? Most people know that chickens, there aren't such things as chickens without bones out there, right? People understand that. People understand that fish have bones in it. So that's large part where their expectations come from, right?
Sure. And I think as we look at each individual case at the trial court level, we look at what is the general knowledge that sets the reasonable expectation, and then pare it down to this diner, this consumer, this advertisement.
Counselor, do you think there's a difference between filet meaning a boneless cut as opposed to a statement that something is boneless?
I do, because as I said before with His Honor, boneless is a stronger statement than filet. Filet we understand to be we remove the side of the fish from the spine. Boneless means boneless. I don't think there's any other way to interpret.
And my understanding of a filet means a boneless cut. So that's a specific, maybe that is up to the trial court or the trier of fact to determine whether a boneless cut means the same as a process or some meat being boneless, affirmatively being boneless.
And I think you're right, Your Honor, that it is the finder of fact, it is the jury question to answer. Okay. And that's why we're here. I will reserve the balance of my time if there are no more questions.
Thank you. Mr. Burns, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Please, proceed.
Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court. There are two issues I will address with the court this morning, the 12th District's correct application of the reasonable expectation test and the reasons why this court should not adopt the plaintiff's new no summary judgment rule. Turning to the reasonable expectation test, plaintiff's appeal is based on a false premise that the 12th District applied the foreign natural test dressed up as the reasonable expectation test. We know with certainty that is not the case. If it were the case, this matter would have been over 6 years ago, and I'll briefly explain. This court will recall that the case was originally dismissed at the judgment on the pleading stage. On appeal, the 12th District reversed, noting a further evidentiary record was required in order to apply this court's decision in Allen. The 12th District explained it wanted to see evidence about the chicken product involved, the manner in which the chicken dish was prepared, and the size of the bone at issue. The 12th District further noted that the fact that the object was a bone natural to the product is an important factor, but is only one factor. If the 12th District simply intended to apply the foreign natural test, there was no need to reverse, there was no need to remand, and there was no need to send the parties off to conduct discovery. In other words, the 12th District's decision in Berkheimer 1 was a rejection of the foreign natural test. In Berkheimer 2, the court had before it all of the evidence it identified in Berkheimer 1, and it carefully weighed that evidence. Through that discovery that was conducted on remand, we learned the source of the chicken product. It was a chicken breast that was manufactured by Wayne Farms and supplied by GFS. How the restaurant prepared that chicken dish by cutting the breast into 1-inch size pieces that were not ground but breaded, fried, and sauced. The manner in which the plaintiff consumed that chicken dish, according to his testimony, cutting it into thirds. And finally, the size of the bone at issue, a 1.5-inch bone, which took up nearly the entirety of the final piece of chicken that the plaintiff consumed.
So your client wasn't negligent in your eyes, based on all that discovery, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, so that's the argument. Why shouldn't you make that argument to a jury? Why should a judge make that call as a matter of law?
that is consistent with the Allen Court, and the Allen Court found that there are some circumstances where, as a matter of law, a consumer is charged with reasonably anticipating and guarding against an injurious object.
Did your client have a warning on your boneless wings that they may contain bones?
So, Your Honor, my client, and I represent Wayne Farms and GFS, the restaurant did not have a warning that it may contain bones.
Wouldn't that be a better, like, more weight for a judge to make that decision on a summary judgment when you're advertising boneless wings?
Your Honor, I would respectfully submit that it would not change. This is the same exact product that is produced and sold across Ohio under a variety of names. It's a chicken tender. It's a chicken finger. It's a chicken strip. Everybody consumes, and common sense has to come in here, and that's part of the reasonable expectation test.
Counselor, are customers charged more for boneless wings than wings with bones?
I don't believe that there is an upcharge for the fact that it's a boneless wing. And again, this is a small...
Would that matter? Would it matter if the customer has to pay more for a wing or meat or product that is boneless because of the process of removal?
If there were a situation where an individual went into a restaurant and there were two pieces of chicken, let's say, and they said, here's the chicken, let's say it was Dover sole, and if you want Dover sole deboned, we're going to charge you an extra $10. But if you're going to just take it as it is, here's the other price. I would think that may make a difference. But there's no evidence to that in this record. What the evidence is this is a small chicken wing restaurant, right? And they serve wings. Some people don't care for the traditional wings. They want a chicken tender or a chicken nugget. So in this restaurant, they either say, you can get traditional wings or you get what we're going to call boneless wings. We submit that the law should not, and the liability of the restaurant and the manufacturer and the supplier should not rise or fall on the fact that this same exact piece of chicken that everybody is going to eat in the exact same way should change based on whether or not it's called a boneless wing or a chicken tender or a chicken strip. There's no evidence in this record that anybody would have eaten the food product differently, that the plaintiff would have eaten the food product differently.
Except if it's a chopped up bone, that's a lot different from a bone in a wing that has bones in it, right? If it's an inch and a half piece of bone that's not an entire bone but a chopped up piece, it's not the same, is it?
So, Your Honor, I agree with you that a traditional wing is different than this product. The bone here, there's no evidence that this was chopped up. In fact, it was an inch and a half long bone, so there's no evidence that this was ground up or it was so small that couldn't be detected. And that was part of what the 12th District looked at when it conducted its reasonable expectation analysis and compared this case to Allen. It said this bone was approximately the same size as the shell that we had in Allen. And given the size of the bone, all of the factors considered, under some situations, as a matter of law, this is something that can be reasonably...
But reasonable expectation on a wing that has bones in it, it's much bigger than an inch and a half. And even if it's coming off of a chicken breast, I think anybody knows that the ribs in a chicken are longer than an inch and a half. So how do you say it doesn't really make any difference whether it was a part of a bone or a whole bone? Doesn't that affect reasonable expectation of a consumer?
I think because of the size of the bone here, which was similar to the size of the bone in the Matthews versus Mayville case, the size of the bone actually favors a reasonable expectation. If you look at the Lawton Milk case, that involved chopped ham, right? And it was a very small, white, hard substance. And there the court said, this is a question of fact because you don't know if somebody could reasonably anticipate and guard against something this small. But the court in Allen and the 12th District here and in the Matthews versus Mayville case all found that if it's something this large, it's natural to the product, given all of the factors, that's something that could be reasonably anticipated and guarded against.
But, Allen was a 4-3 decision, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
But getting
the dissenter saying it should have gone to the jury.
And getting back to the jury on this one, the evidence shows after it was sent back by the 12th District that these chicken wings were larger than usual. So when he cut them into three pieces, he somehow, one of those pieces, they must have been at least an inch and a half wide each time he cut them. So I guess I'm asking you, why wouldn't the question of the reasonableness of that testimony go to a jury?
Because under Ohio law, every case is going to end up in a jury. So that would be, you would essentially be taking his position and the plaintiff's position that all of these cases need to go to a jury.
Except we could limit it and say, when you expressly say boneless or lactose-free or dairy-free or gluten-free or peanut-free, that if you don't provide some kind of warning, then yeah, it should go to the jury. The question of, I mean, the definition of fillet is boneless cut or slice of fish. That one might be able to be decided without a jury. But when you're looking at the reasonable expectation of the consumer, when it says boneless, when it says dairy-free, when it says gluten-free, why couldn't you make the differentiation so that you don't have this flood?
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully submit there has not been a flood of cases. There are two decisions that I'm aware of in Ohio involving this, the issue of something.
Well, I think you're expressing a concern for a flood of cases, for every case to have to go to the jury. We don't have to say that in our decision.
Well, and then I would submit that if this became a decision saying that if there is the word boneless is used, it's a jury question. If it's not, it's not a jury question.
Not necessarily. People who could put a warning on our boneless wings may contain bones, be on notice of that. And that could go into the equation of the judge on whether they had a reasonable expectation.
On summary judgment.
On summary judgment. So what I would suggest is if that rule is made, restaurant menus are changed, and this rule is not going to apply in any other case, right? So then you have an individual who's eating a chicken tender and said, I didn't think there'd be a bone in a chicken tender. I didn't expect there'd be a bone in this. It's the exact same product as the quote-unquote boneless chicken wing. Why does that person have a different standard that applies to him or this less favorable standard? I don't think it's reasonable to say that a reasonable expectation is different between a chicken tender and something that happened to have been labeled.
But shouldn't the way filet mignon steak.
Yes.
And it's got an inch and a half bone. And the person I'm having dinner with orders a filet mignon and has a tenth of an inch of a bone. Those are two different cases, according to what I'm hearing from you?
Those are two different cases under Ohio law, yes, as the Ohio appellate district courts have decided those cases. I would submit they are.
And so one of them, the inch and a half, there is no recourse. And the tenth of the inch, there is a jury recourse.
Potentially.
Okay.
And again, it goes to what, because.
But we haven't said that.
No, the courts that have applied
the appellate courts
for 60
have.
Years yeah. and have applied it consistently with consistent results have said that.
But shouldn't there be, a way a product is advertised will weigh heavily on a person's expectation? For instance, you said there really is no difference between a boneless chicken wing and a chicken tender and a chicken strip. Or a filet, maybe for that matter. But is that the case? I mean, saying something is boneless is unequivocally clear. Whether saying chicken tender, chicken strip, filet is as clear, shouldn't we, the courts, make some distinction there, depending on how the product is advertised?
I disagree. I also think, particularly given this product and the facts we have before us, we don't have a record that shows us how lactose milk or gluten-free items should be produced or designed or labeled. And I would suggest if Ohio is going to change the law on that to deal with consumer class actions or consumer expectations, that is best left to the legislature to look and say, how big of an issue is this? What should we do? What are the benefits and the trade-offs if we impose new rules? They have that fact-finding. We don't have any of that evidence before us.
So then you're basically saying it should go to a jury, right?
No, I disagree, Your Honor. I'm saying
why should we, as a matter of law, declare what is actionable and what's negligence and what's not? I mean, the legislature could do that, but we're a court. Wouldn't it make more sense on negligence to go to a jury?
I disagree, Your Honor. I think if you look at the cases, even when you look at cases from outside the jurisdiction that the plaintiff has pointed to say, well, these are proper applications. You look at the Morrison's Cafeteria case from Alabama, 1983, reasonable expectation case. There was a 1 centimeter bone in a piece of fish fillet. Again, the court said, it's reasonable to anticipate and guard against. And I will say there's two prongs to this. I think that it sort of gets caught up with the reasonable anticipation, but the test is both to reasonably anticipate and guard against. And when the court's looking at this, when the court looked at it, Allen, it said, if you've got something that big, one, it's natural, so that sort of puts you on notice. It's not a bolt or a screw or a pencil piece. So it's natural, so yes, that's an important factor, but then is it something you can guard against? And Your Honor, it goes to your point, if it's very, very small, you probably can't reasonably guard against that, or maybe that's a jury question.
But that's why I kind of got cut off. But I was going to, well then, what about something that's a half an inch long?
If it's a half an inch
long? A tenth
long?
Of an inch, we're saying, goes to the jury. If it's an inch and a half, we're saying, doesn't go to the jury. What about a half an inch?
A half an inch, in what size is the food?
It's a filet mignon, 8 ounce.
And how was it cut up? How was it prepared? Because that's part of what the court looked at here. The court did a reasonable expectation test. And it applied it and looked at all those facts. And it looked at, when you look at this piece of chicken and the bone, so you'd have, that was part of the comparison it looked at.
Okay, but also wouldn't the court be looking at the comparison of what the consumer has heard? Isn't that part of the reasonable expectation?
The reasonable expectation, I think in this case, the word bone, because what we have, it's a boneless chicken wing,
right,
that everybody, common sense has to come in. It's not a magical warranty that this is a bone-free. It's, do you want the traditional wings or do you want more of a chicken nugget?
And that's what I'm asking. In this situation, what if it was a half an inch? We've said that the bone was an inch and a half, and you're saying, okay, that's out. But if it was a tenth of an inch, well, it goes to jury. I'm saying, what if it's a half an inch? Who's making that decision?
The court has the evidence in front of them, and the court is able to, looking at all the factors, can say, we think under these facts, summary judgment is appropriate. Or the court can say, the court has the discretion in applying the reasonable expectation test. For example, in the Lawton Milk case that said, well, here we've got this white substance, it's pretty small, I'm going to send it to a jury. This is for the court with all of the evidence in front of it.
As a matter of law?
As a matter of law, yes.
It's a gatekeeping.
It's a gatekeeping, okay. Absolutely.
So, I mean, I'm still not hearing, like, why in this case, it as a matter of law, that something that was advertised as a boneless wing, I mean, parents can walk into a restaurant and buy boneless wings because they don't want, if they're feeding it to their children, they don't want them to eat something that may have a bone in it, right? I mean, doesn't that fact, you can answer the question.
Thank you, Your Honor. I am past my time. None of that evidence is in this record that there is some problem or some issue where people are going in and encountering, you know, this a widespread issue or that there is some detrimental reliance. In fact, the plaintiff did not say that he detrimentally relied on this warning. In his deposition testimony, he at one point referred to the product as a nugget. In another point, he referred to it as a tender. This is essentially the same product, and we would be creating a one-off rule that would take the word boneless off of menus. It would not improve Ohio law because then we would still have all of the same substance, the same dish served. The word boneless would disappear from menus, and we would have, I would say, the case law would remain the same as it is, that now if it says boneless, you're out. You get to go to a jury trial, but all of the other cases continue to be applied as they were under Allen. So I would say that is not an improvement of Ohio law or a benefit of Ohio law and would actually lead to more confusion and to more litigation. My time is up, so if there are no further questions, we would respectfully ask that the court affirm on the merits.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Stokar, you still have 3 minutes and 19 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Stokar, can I ask you to start you off? Do you think there's this boneless chicken wing and a chicken tender and a chicken nugget and chicken strips are all the same or synonymous?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. And in this case, you'll notice in the deposition of Ms. Snyder, who was the proprietor of REKM, we went through the process of how they make their
wings, their boneless chicken, and their tenders. They are different sourced chicken products. They are certainly, the frying steps are the same, but the prep steps are different.
So this entity had chicken strips or chicken tenders on the menu also?
So the menu that was presented to Mr. Berkheimer said, pick your chicken. It had a column that said wings, a column that said boneless, and a column that said tenders. And then sizing and pricing, and to go back to something my friend on the other side said, there was, at the time of Mr. Berkheimer's injury, a difference in the pricing between boneless and wings. Certainly at the lowest order level, which I think may have been 5 or 6 pieces, the boneless wings were 50 cents more expensive per order. So yes, there was an upcharge, certainly at that time. It got changed later for record-keeping reasons, but at the time of the injury, there was an upcharge.
And that's all in the evidence?
Yes, ma'am. It's in the Kim Snyder deposition and the menu that we went through for the injury.
So I go to Chipotle. I go to Taco Bell, getting a Power Bowl or a Chipotle bowl, and they ask, do you want diced chicken? Or I'm in a restaurant and it's shredded chicken or pulled pork. I get a bone. That's a jury question.
It certainly can be. If your expectation is, every day we have oral argument, we go to the same restaurant, I've done this 30 times, I have never encountered a bone, and then one time you do, well, your reasonable expectation is there are no bones to be encountered. What is our reasonable expectation even greater in society of when we encounter these things? As we had in this case, there was a clear advertisement of boneless at every level of commerce. When the box left Wayne Farms to go to Gordon, it said boneless, no warning. When the box left Gordon to go to REKM, boneless, no warning. When the food left the kitchen at REKM to go to the diner, boneless, no warning. At every level of commerce and every step of this process, the advertisement is boneless without exception.
So I think just sell chicken and say traditional chicken, or here's other chicken, still may have bones.
I think if you put that advertisement on as a seller, it shapes the reasonable expectation of the consumer, and then to hold one way or the other, if we look at a bone, the naturalness of that bone is certainly a factor, but it's not the dispositive factor. And that's where I think a lot of these lower courts have lost their way, that they say, well, it's natural to the product, therefore you expect it. And that strays from Allen. And even when we look at the 12th District with Matthews, Matthews says, well, neither test holds sway in Ohio. But that, I think that's completely incorrect, because Allen says this is a reasonable expectation test. We are not a foreign natural state. So with that, I see I'm over my time. I ask that the 12th District be overturned and this matter returned to Butler County for trial.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll receive a decision from the court. Marshall, would you please recess the court?